And that's the kicky music that means it's time for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Trey Graham, sitting in for Linda Holmes, who's on her way back from Los Angeles. I'm here in the studio with this week's particularly motley and mongrel version of the Pop Culture Happy Hour crew. Stephen Thompson, you're here.
I am here.
What do you do for NPR, sir?
I am an editor and writer with NPR Music.
And Barry Hardiman, you are back with us again.
I know.
What do you do for a living, Missy?
I do know the answer to this question. I'm an editor at Talk of the Nation.
And because Glenn Weldon is in an undisclosed tropical location this week, we have asked Tanya Ballard Brown to join us. Tanya, remind us what you do for NPR.
I work for digital news.
Oh, she knows where things are. She knows about, you know,
I'm sure the
headlines
debt ceiling.
So glad to have a sister in news.
Ceiling. Yes. Carl 60 Cent Castle in the Change Room.
Oh, nice. If you haven't heard this, you need to.
Yes.
You think I take every opportunity to sing?
Yeah, and promote your own work.
I'm also one of the people who mans the NPR Tumblr. You should follow us. That's all.
All right. Well, speaking of news and people who follow it, topic the first, that being we are hosed.
We couldn't rip a story right out of the headlines without first opening a newspaper.
Right.
Turns out
things are happening.
Top story.
London is burning.
Top
the
story.
Stock markets are bipolar. The week-to-week audience for the reality show Same Name is up substantially since last week.
Apocalypse.
In other words, it's because of
the world is falling apart under our feet. So, so we want to ask, what lessons can we take from the world of entertainment and pop culture? I'm going to just set some boundaries right up front. There are good lessons to be taken, probably, but there are also some bad lessons to be taken about how to cope with adversity and chaos. Mm-hmm. If you are holding out for a hero, I want to know what pop culture tells you about how you should behave and what you should look for. Stephen Thompson, what has Hollywood taught you about surviving hard times?
That sort of sense of always having like a bomb shelter at the ready. I feel like that's a very American sensibility, the kind of like hoard munitions and bottled water and duct tape and Visqueen and, you know, to sort of be at the ready for the invasion of zombies.
Mm-hmm. Right, yes.
They're here.
For the encroachment of, you know, aliens, robots, monsters.
Arnold.
The Irish.
Kevin Bacon.
Any sort of encroaching kind of vague menace.
Yes.
You know, that we should be right. And I mean, there are certainly, as I'm sure, you know, many of you as book readers are familiar with the works of Max Brooks, Son of Mel, who has written all the various like zombie survival guides.
Yes, yes.
I feel like in general, popular culture has done a great job of sort of preparing us for how to deal with the worst. I look to any number of zombie movies to prepare us for the looming apocalypse.
I think you're right. I think that Hollywood has thought through everything that could conceivably happen. And I personally take my lessons from the 1999 Brendan Fraser movie Blast from the Past. You were mentioning
as one does.
You know,
I don't like him, but I like that movie.
Of course, he's a sweetheart in that movie. It's a little boy meets
what's wrong
girl.
With Brendan Fraser? He's kind of a lunk. He's an agreeable lunk.
He is like 80 still trying to be a child. No.
I give to you Dudley Do-Right,
no.
Missy.
No.
I didn't see that. No.
I'm kind of still a fan of School Ties, but, you know, I'm a Jew, so maybe it's that. You know, he's also in that movie, in School Ties, he's like the tallest living Jew. So it kind of gave me hope for my future partners, you know. I'm so sorry.
And for your offspring.
And for your
right.
son.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. My,
you never
my,
know. You
my
never
lunky.
Know how tall Hank is going to grow
true.
Up to
That's true. Lunky
be.
Hank. I'm so sorry. Speaking of apocalypse.
Barry Hardiman.
Is so ironic that we are talking about this now, because today we actually, on Talk of the Nation, which is the show that I work on, we actually did a whole segment on apocalyptic movies, on the post-apocalypse, mostly because of Rise of the Planet of the Apes. And what I learned
I thought it was because we were all doomed.
Right. It was a happy, you know, it was a happy coincidence. And what I learned is that if the world is ending, Charlton Heston is going to show up.
Yes.
He's either going to show up at the end. And
he'll be armed.
He'll be armed.
Down the river in a basket.
He may do that. It may be biblical in nature. Mm-hmm. It may mean, you know, he may be the one that's telling you that what you're eating is not what you should
not
eat.
Not what you ought to be eating.
It's
true.
Or,
you know what?
He'll be the one with all the guns and ammunition.
That's true. Well, now I understand why he needed all those guns, because he has walked down that beach and seen the apocalypse.
Well, and the fact of the matter is, if the apocalypse is at hand,
right,
the fact that Soylent Green is people, not going to be a top-of-mind concern.
No. Right? I mean, especially if you then look at the rest of the oeuvre, it's kind of like, you know.
It's true. I think what Stephen is saying is that the other three of us need to stay on our feet because he would, you know, pull out the knife and fork as soon as we fall over.
Well, that's true. And I know which one of you is going to be the juiciest. Which one of you is going to be the stringy?
Hold on just a minute.
Mike Katziff looks a little stringy to me.
I am curvy.
Well, also, this one has a broken arm, too.
That's true. Like, Mike is already
hobbled. Might as well just eat him already. I mean, I don't know why I'm not nibbling on him right now. God. So, if the apocalypse is coming, Charlton Heston is there.
All right, seriously, people, what did you learn about how to treat each other kindly from
Hollywood? I learned from Funny Girl.
Yes.
Don't rain on my parade.
Oh, mm.
I'm going to live and live now.
I'm not sure that's really about adversity.
Yes.
Is it about the zombie apocalypse?
Well, I learned in The Walking Dead, which is this new show that I'm really loving, and I can't wait until the second season starts on October the 15th, that you have to shoot people in the back of the head and then they'll stop eating you.
Only in the back of the head?
Oh.
Can you shoot them in the front?
Shoot them in the front?
Head?
Now this is me betraying that I haven't watched The Walking Dead.
Yeah,
Glenn Weldon would be
Dead.
So disappointed.
I know.
I think you... Well, let me go back. You can shoot them in the head, and then they'll stop nibbling on you.
Right.
I do fear, and Hollywood has tried to warn me on this, I do fear that I'm insufficiently armed.
Mm. Yes.
You know.
What we need is Batman. Mm. What we need is Marvel. We need all the Marvel comics.
But those, you
characters.
Know, one thing I would argue about, again, having thought very seriously about what qualifies as an apocalypse movie, I would actually argue that those are not apocalypse movies. But apocalypse movies, the end has come. New York has been destroyed.
You need an
the
entire city to have been wiped out.
You need
out.
To recognize that it was once the world and is no longer.
Okay. So the little kid in the Knowing movie who saw the scribbles on the piece of paper and
that again is a pre. I mean, that's okay. That's kind of for
right,
me.
It's still coming.
But
I
feel really geeky about this stuff.
But I think staving off an apocalypse, sort of survival in a post-apocalyptic hellscape.
Yes.
First of all, is going to be very key for those of us, you know, in this economic whatchamawhat.
That was it.
I will say at times like these. You know, people laughed at me for putting all my money into Beanie Babies. But who's laughing now?
Nobody.
Probably. If the apocalypse movies are ever any indication, those Beanie Babies are sitting in a corner actually laughing.
Mm.
And, or, you know, with little cold blue eyes.
Or keeping you warm in
that's
the,
true.
In
that's
the
right.
That's
basement
true.
Hovel that you're cowering in. I kind of think we might have taken this a little too far. I feel like we went from... in peril to post-apocalyptic really quickly.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
So I'm kind of wondering about, everybody has seen, actually, I haven't, I've never watched it all the way through, It's a Wonderful Life, right? I'm thinking about that
what?
Kind of.
What?
I know, I'm a bad,
how
bad
can
person.
You not have
oh my God,
really
so
great. On this show.
I might have to get up and leave.
Trey just grew so much hair in your eyes.
Yes, indeed.
So now I'm thinking about movies that are about, you know, serious adversity, but where people rediscover a kind of humanity that, mm-hmm. that they had lost track of in the day-to-day fuss. So, I don't know, Working Girl. We've talked about Working Girl. We've talked about It's a Wonderful
yes.
Life. What else? What else inspires you and, you know, sort of distracts you and again, offers lessons for getting through times like
Falling
this?
Falling Down.
Tell me more.
Where Michael Douglas goes insane.
Yes.
He said, sir, all I want is to get a quarter to make a phone call. I'm having a bad day. I love that movie.
Yeah.
I've never seen it.
Ooh.
I know. And I'm a big Michael Douglas fan, but no.
I personally go back to Barbara Streisand, Funny Girl. She made us laugh.
We're not going to go to the apocalypse, you wimps. I think I would go again to, I have to go to the big epics. I have to go to I'll Never Be Hungry Again.
Oh,
is there anyone who can survive adversity
no.
like Miss
How did this podcast get gayer without Glenn Weldon?
I think I actually brought up the gayness.
I think she did. Well, no, Tanya brought up Funny Girl.
That's true. That's true. Really, it's true. It's amazing. Well done.
I think Anti-Mame is the... Oh,
oh I love it!
Another!
Anti-Mame is a fine, yeah. fine epic yes. about surviving adversity.
Yeah,
it is.
Many,
it
many
is.
Ups and downs about
Dr.
adversity.
Dr. Zhivago,
Annie.
Yep.
Hello, Annie.
The sun will come out.
Oh, God. all of the topics that we have discussed, all of the Hollywood artifacts that we've discussed so far, will cost you a certain amount of money, whether it's to rent a DVD, to subscribe to cable, to subscribe to Netflix,
to
or,
own a
know,
television or computer.
To own a television set. So what we're curious about is, in these desperate, in these economic times, what can you do? What is your favorite activity that involves getting your tail off the sofa, Stephen Thompson?
And, you just asked the wrong man.
And most importantly, costs you absolutely nothing.
I mean, technically, I could talk to my children, but the notion that my
kids doesn't speak English.
The notion that my kids cost no money just does not hold water at
all. Yeah, that's, you can only take that so far.
I think if you break down how much having kids has cost me, it does not qualify as free.
Yes.
You know, though I am not a devout book reader, as we have discussed, joining one's local library.
I wholeheartedly get behind that.
You guys are so cute. Your libraries.
in my own personal pursuit of not only becoming a better person, but spending less money, I have joined my local library and have, you know, checked out Muppet DVDs for the kids. Now, technically, you have to own a DVD player in order to enjoy. So I've tried to come up with things that are actually free. We can count a deck of cards
as basically free. Because you've probably inherited one of those.
If you're talking about less than a dollar,
that's why the Jokers are gone.
Promotional decks of cards.
That's right.
We talked just the other week about board games and sort of ways to get in gigantic fights with one's family. Mm-hmm. Can't go wrong with a deck of cards. Hopscotch, cup and ball.
What?
If you can fashion a cup and ball.
Oh, right. Okay.
A little string.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Yeah. Thatching one's own hut.
Oh, Stephen.
Foraging.
We were scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Foraging.
Barry Hardiman, do you have any actual
Because I've already spoken about celebrity on this podcast, this would be a perfect opportunity to play celebrity. But I will also say that I am of the why would you remove your butt from the couch person, but I would remove my butt from the couch to go sit on the porch. I love some porch sitting.
Porch sitting and people watching.
And and in this, even in the hottest of weather, and my favorite thing to do is sit on the porch, get yourself, I know this costs a little bit of money, but only a little bit, get yourself a Miller Lite, because I promise, no matter what happens, you cannot get drunk from that Miller Lite. I've never gotten drunk off a Miller Lite. I really haven't. You can ask almost anyone.
I think it's made of tears of the lonely.
I think it's made of tears of the sorority, to be honest with you.
Sad.
So I love, you know, a little porch sitting, car counting, flag looking at the waving, you know, elbowing your husband to go get you another Miller, whatever.
Right.
I think porch sitting.
Well, think about how much more eventful porch sitting will be once there are marauding hordes of zombies.
That's true. Or, you know, this way you'll be able to see Arnold coming from the bottom down, you know,
down
further
the
down the street,
the
So, yes. Any H.G. Wells happenings are going to be more clear when you're on your porch.
Right. They can't sneak up on you if you're on your porch.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Tanya Ballard Brown.
I don't like getting off my couch either, but if I'm forced to actually separate buttock from cushion, we can walk to the park. They have free movies in the park, and they have swings in the park.
Swings are an awesome idea.
And monkey bars and seesaws and slides.
I will add, because several people have brought up the couch, you can't go wrong with a good couch fort, people.
It's true.
That is true.
Yes.
Build yourself a nice fort.
I'm Although it helps
costs.
If you are either under 10 or, you know,
no.
developmentally
no,
under 10. Like
no. does not matter whatsoever.
No. I'm going to second Tanya Ballard Brown on the outdoor movie screening thing in the park. There's a fantastic thing here in D.C. called Screen on the Green that happens on the National Mall down by the Washington Monument. And one of the traditions that happens down there, I think it's sponsored by HBO, right?
Oh,
so,
yes.
And they at the beginning of the movie, they play the old school 80s HBO spaceship opening where they
which I always sort of heard as here is nudity for you
and blood.
But the thing about Screen on the Green is that a particular crowd behavior has emerged. When they play the theme song, people stand up and pogo. Like all these people, all these Washingtonians in this button-down city, the city that people think is about nothing but politics and gridlock, they stand up and they pogo and they wave their hands in the air like this. You can't see it, but I'm basically flopping my wrists back and forth.
I assume when I have my eyes closed that you're doing that
You just assume that's a Tuesday, right? So, yes, but so Screen on the Green, excellent. Also, you can go to the ballpark here in Washington and watch the opera from the infield. You can take a blanket and put it on the infield.
Is that free?
And yeah, I believe it is free. I'm not positive. I think
in order
free.
To lure people
I
to the opera,
I'm pretty sure it's free. Yes, it's about luring people to the opera. I'm pretty sure it's free. If not, it's really
can you
cheap.
Get hot dogs?
Probably.
Hot dogs and opera.
Well, I think people bring picnic baskets, but you can probably get hot dogs because, you know, the ballpark is open.
It's like Glyndebourne.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Well, with hot dogs.
Yeah, exactly. The butler serving a hot dog.
You know, all kinds of free outdoor concerts like that. Also, related, I would never, ever urge someone to do anything illegal, anything that might be construed as theft. But there is a great theatrical tradition known as second acting, which is where you go to the theater district, be it, you know, downtown Washington, D.C., or, you know, the Times Square area, and you watch for a popular musical letting out at intermission. And you pick off the elderly people and the and the suburbanites who are going
with
home.
What?
We combine the apocalypse with our second topic.
With the Charlton Heston gun. Right. No, you watch to see who's leaving. And if a sufficient number of people decide that they're not going back in, then you just mingle with the crowd and go back in with them. There are always empty seats at the second act. It is an honored tradition for young musical theater fans and college students everywhere.
And thieves. Who will be punished.
They are morally culpable, all of them. But it is a fine way to see the second half of a Broadway musical that you would not otherwise see.
But it's a little confusing, I'm sure. We're like, why are all these people? How did they end up with the building being turned down? Or well, the rent, you know?
That's what. Why is the rent due?
Exactly. I get it.
Pay the rent.
Exactly.
You can just start. You can just whisper to the person next to you. Can you fill me in on all the backstory?
Right.
Mimi seems sick. She's coughing.
And of course, the one thing that you can always do, assuming that you have managed to squirrel away enough money to get to the grocery store, is, you know, eat. you can sit there and stuff your face while you're doing one of these free activities. And personally, there are a few things that make me happier than eating.
Than day-old bakery.
Day-old bakery.
Also, I mean, in that same couch, presumably, there are snacks.
There's a French
I'm always,
fry.
Exactly.
There's a French fry left over on the sofa, right?
A little tiny
cracker.
Nugget of something, yeah.
All right, well, speaking of excellent dietary choices, there was news recently that McDonald's was changing
there was
the
news
composition.
Recently.
That's why we called in these news people
That's
to
right.
help us out.
There were headlines recently, I don't know, a week or two ago, about how McDonald's was going to change the default composition of the Happy Meal to sort of try to lure children into eating more fruit, right? Mm-hmm. So
and to lure more children into, you know, being encouraged to eat McDonald's.
Right, to eat Happy Meals at
right.
McDonald's.
Right.
So, you know, there are fewer fries and,
well, really
and a little default portion
right.
of fruit.
Yeah.
Right. The idea is that, you know,
well, and to
let the parents...
Because no kid will be lured by an apple. Halloween is proof of that. I still know that house on Newton Street. I know you still give out apples.
So we thought we'd talk a little bit about the intersection of popular culture, fast food, and opinions thereabout, right? Whether you're a fan of it because it makes your life easy or whether you're against it for one reason or another. And it occurred to us that there is kind of a position that gets staked out in popular culture that comes off as condescending and privileged when you're talking about these things. We've mentioned Peanut Free Mom on mm-hmm. this podcast.
The
comedy Twitter account. And one of Peanut Free Mom's earlier tweets, one of the ones that brought her to our attention, was, I don't understand why everyone doesn't shop at Whole Foods. And it's that kind of perspective, that kind of condescension, I think, that gets reflected in some of the conversation about the dangers of Happy Meals. The reality is that a Happy Meal or a meal at McDonald's is a way for people to stretch their budgets. It's mm-hmm. it's a
and
reality.
And it makes you happy.
And it's
it does. And it comes with a toy.
It's filling.
Yes.
It comes with a toy. So
I get Happy
Thompson,
Meals all the time.
Tanya Ballard Brown, you have expressed the occasional fondness for a McDonald's burger.
No, not the burger.
No, just the Happy Meal?
Just the Happy Meal.
Well, meal
with the nuggets?
With the
nuggets. Six nuggets, small fry, sweet tea.
Oh, sweet my God.
That is far too dainty right. a meal for the likes of me.
And what's the attraction?
It's salty and
for
good.
A middle-class professional lady like you.
I have no children, and there are times when I go home and I don't want to cook, and I can eat an happy meal and then place the buttock on the sofa, and I'm done.
So what does it say to you when the...
Peanut lady?
The peanut lady or you know, the official voices of good eating tell you that that you're a terrible person for stopping to get the Happy Meal on your way home.
Whatever, I'm fat. I like Happy Meals. I mean, I go, I shop at Whole Foods. I get Whole Foods. I was at Whole Foods every day. Yesterday they took my whole paycheck, but I'm going to have some McDonald's. Okay. And we didn't get to have it when I was growing up. So it's still sort of
the same way.
So it's a guilty pleasure for you is what it is.
Yeah. My mother was like, no.
Period.
Don't ask.
Mm-hmm. Which brings up, you know, the sort of marketing to kids and parental authority. Yeah. Stephen Thompson, how do you handle it with your kids?
I let them eat McDonald's is one way that I handle it. I mean, I do think that the ubiquity of McDonald's in our culture is an interesting thing, and the way that they're sort of part of a promotional puzzle. Like currently, I took the kids to McDonald's over the weekend during a road trip, and they sort of sneered. They sort of sneered at the Smurfs toys. Like,
right.
You know, I think they've picked up on my disdain for the Smurfs franchise.
Well, I hope that they've picked up on our collective disdain for Monopoly, because you know that's a
big no. A big we still play
or just our collective disdain.
It's really interesting that the way McDonald's has become sort of a token lightning rod for Americans don't eat right.
A pop culture punching bag.
Pop culture punching bag. Exactly. And you know, I mean, obviously there's a very, very well-known documentary called Supersize Me, mm-hmm. in which Morgan Spurlock eats McDonald's every day. Every meal every day for 30 days.
Until he ruins his health.
Every day, every meal. Oh my God.
And he turns gray and he and he gains all this weight. And so, you know, it's sort of become this, you know, regularly there are sort of these stories about sort of what's wrong with McDonald's. Mm-hmm. And there's a long list. But at the same time, there's also a very interesting episode of the Penn & Teller Showtime program, which I cannot name on this podcast, but it's Penn & Teller BS! which is very often a fascinating mm-hmm. show. And they do a whole episode sort of about, you know, trying to sort of debunk the hysteria around McDonald's. And, you know, among the things they say, first of all, I mean, Supersize Me, you don't eat every meal at McDonald's. For God's sake, if you do that, you're crazy.
Wait, what are you telling me?
I'm sorry. I don't eat at McDonald's every day. But one thing that they were saying was sort of that it's very, very easy for the peanut-free moms of the world to say everybody should buy organic at Whole Foods.
Right.
But that for budgetary reasons, you know, fast food is an absolute necessity for an enormous number of families, especially in these pre-apocalyptic times. in which we live. But I personally, as somebody who, for various reasons, has to take a lot of long road trips with mm-hmm. my kids, find that it's crucial, and that the toys in the Happy Meals, you know, I'm sorry. I don't consider myself a bad parent. And there are times when, as a parent, you need a crutch. And the toys in the Happy Meals.
Crutch.
Dad needs crutch. That, you know, like absolutely everything. Food at McDonald's should be consumed within, you know, in moderation and within reason.
Barry Hardiman, what are your plans for raising your little parasite on fast food?
Well, he is a parasite, and I would be lying if I didn't say that I hadn't shoved a burger in his mouth, but I have shoved a bottle of many different
kinds. You've
shoved
bottles in your mouth,
this is part of this porch sipping. Anyway, so, you know, food certainly makes us happy. And I, like Tanya, I wasn't allowed to go to McDonald's as a kid, so it became a big, the same way that television, I wasn't allowed to watch television.
Oh my gosh.
And now you never watch. You were trained never to watch TV.
And now I am a person that has seen every single episode of Beverly Hills 90210. I watch Real Road World's Challenge.
You watch Cinemax Silk Stockings.
You watch the bad stuff.
I do. I mean, I go
deep. That's the bad stuff.
I really do. And it's.
I mean, like, what about Basketball Wives and the Kardashians? You know,
I watch that too. Don't I mean,
I watch. Speaking of junk food,
Edinburgh. So I mean, and again, that is the junk food of TV. And I do have a little rule for myself, which I love to indulge, which is that if I am not home. So if I'm on the road, if I'm on vacation, then that's when I get to have McDonald's. And I get real excited about it. In fact, whenever I go home with my husband to Kansas, we stay in this area in which, you know, it is truly a food desert. There are, you know, there's a McDonald's and a Burger King and a Wendy's, and it's really exciting picking the franchise that we're going to go to that night.
I can't decide whether I'm going to have a Big Mac or a Whopper.
And sometimes I have a Big Mac and a big fry, and I go have a Frosty for dessert. I mix it up.
Now, you know, that's interesting that you would say that, because now I don't fool with Burger King.
Really?
I am McDonald's loyal.
Really? I actually like Burger King burgers better.
But it's because I don't eat the burgers.
Yeah.
Honestly, I mean,
their burgers are saltier, and I mean, salt is, let's be honest, that's what we all want.
Salt is the point of fast food. It's basically a salt delivery vehicle.
But I guess, I mean, I think we're kind of breezing past an interesting point, which is Barry and Tanya were denied McDonald's as children. Mm-hmm. As adults, it has not been bred into you.
Mm-mm.
You know, oh, I mustn't eat McDonald's.
No.
This is why. Let your kids eat McDonald's.
I know. I'm picturing the little the little arrow right now and wishing that my car was turning into it. We were all going to hear that scratchy mouth, you know, with the newest sale coming out. $30 special for, you know, I mean, I love that. I still,
would you like
know.
To supersize that?
Yeah. And my daughter just this weekend was like, Dad, I don't want to go to McDonald's. I hate McDonald's.
See? There you and go. She probably won't want to watch Beverly Hills 90.
She's
going to
grow up.
Either.
She's going to grow up to be peanut-free mom, mm-hmm. and she will not watch That's reality right. television. Right. And I guess That's this right. is the standard. And it will disappoint me greatly. And this right. is the standard that ultimately I should be aiming for.
In, yes,
your Alex P. Keaton.
And in related parenting advice, I think you want to give your 9-year-old daughter her first vodka stinger this week, right?
That because I think she'll find a way on her own.
The views
sure
on this podcast are not.
I'll drink to that.
Are not endorsed.
You can
by
get
NPR.
Drunk off of those.
All right. I think we have established that junk food makes us happy, and we are happy about happy meals. So that, of course, brings us to the segment
this episode brought to you by McDonald's.
It is time for us to share, as always, what's making us happy this week. And as it happens, I have two, and I want to read the first one first because it's food related. There are two blogs, Cooking Ice and Fire and In at the Crossroads, two of what may very well be many blogs devoted to experimenting with the foods and the cooking methods described in the Game of Thrones books.
Oh my! Yay!
One of them is taking the Julie and Julia approach. They're trying to make everything that's in the
even
books.
Even the honeyed locust?
God, I certainly hope so. although I do hope that they will stop short of the marinated puppies. The other one is taking a more selective approach, but they have organized, I love this story, they've organized volunteers to deliver food baskets to each and every one of the stops on George R.R. Martin's book tour. I don't know if they're
adorable.
Feeding him or the people who come out to see him.
Feeding him. But they're making him eat his own.
But either way, it's kind of a nice gesture, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, Barry Hardiman, what is making you happy this week?
This is going to be the second week, not in a row, but it's definitely recently where I'm going to talk up a Canadian TV program.
No.
Is it Top Chef Canada?
No.
Is it Project Runway Canada?
Project Runway Canada is awesome.
I believe that. But this is actually a serious show. It's called Intelligence. Hmm. And
I'm out.
Of which we have.
And I've heard it described as the Canadian Wire, which it is really not. It doesn't quite go as deep. But what I really like about it, and I was talking to a friend earlier who has her significant other is Canadian, and I said, did you know that Canadians kind of hate us? And she said, well, yes, they, you know, we call them, you know, America's hat, and, you know, they are not like, you know, they really resent us.
The 51st
But what's
state.
Amazing about this, so this is, it takes place in Vancouver, and it is all the intersections between the organized crime unit and a drug dealer, a major marijuana dealer in Vancouver. I'm halfway through the second season, and the big bad in the second season is not the drug dealer. It's not the big cocaine dealer. It's not the people who are actually murdering people. It's the Americans. I turned to my husband, and I said, we're allies, right? Are we still? It's really amazing. And it is also smartly plotted with a wonderful cast and really great, you know, people with many sides. You know, the drug dealer has a good side, and the woman running organized crime.
Everybody has a good side except for the Americans.
Except for the Americans who are one-dimensional, kind, you know, truly the stereotype of the ugly American.
You're saying basically the way Americans have treated almost every other nation in major Hollywood exports.
Exactly. Yeah. It is a fascinating look at how others see us.
Love
as
it or
well.
Leave it, Trey Graham.
Exactly. As well as a wonderful series in and of itself. So, and I will also say, for right now, it is on on-demand Netflix. So, as far as the best in, not exactly free entertainment, but cheaper than others. So, I would urge you to go explore the instant queue and check out Intelligence.
Tanya Ballard Brown, what do you have for us? What's making you happy this week?
You know, Trey and I had a conversation earlier about the book and the movie The Help. I got a chance to see The Help this weekend. And the book was just okay to me. But the movie was really entertaining. I enjoyed it. And in some ways, it made me think about my grandma who passed away last fall. In a good way, though.
I was going to say, remember the name of the segment.
What's making me happy is grief.
In a good way.
Now we should explain, you didn't just get to see the movie, you were at the
NABJ
conference,
so
you got to mingle with...
National Association of Black Journalists, and there was a panel afterward with Taylor Tate, some nice-looking fellow from Mississippi.
The screenwriter and director, right?
Yes. And then the author, Kathleen Stockett, somebody. Let me just tell y'all that I read this book and I didn't really care for it, so that's why I'm not taking that.
And she's being sued. So we ought to mention.
But back to the topic of Tanya's grandma.
And then, Octavia Spencer was there, and Viola Davis, who started the movie. And I wondered, with all these kind of angry black folk in the audience, if the two other folk, the director and the author lady, were going to be all right. But it turned out well. I mean, cause, you know, she wrote this book and people were angry about it.
There has been some controversy around this book. Let's leave it at that, I think. But so why did it make you think of your grandmother?
My granny was the help, though I don't know that I ever really understood that she was the help. I just knew that she worked with a lady when I was little and I didn't care because I spent the night and I had cakes or whatever. But when she passed away, one of the children that she took care of came and spoke at her funeral, and he talked about how much Mimi meant to him and how the best part of his day was when he got to the end of the curb and he had to wait there, and my grandma would come across the street to pick him up from the curb. And it was something I didn't know about. But he really cared for my grandmother. He loved my grandmother. So in that way,
and this was someone you didn't even really know, right?
No, I didn't know him at all. At first, I was like, who is Mimi?
So that sort of opened up
my grandma's name is Mildred. Who is Mimi?
But it sounds like maybe that reminiscence at the funeral opened up a part of your grandmother's life that you didn't
know
a lot
no
about.
That I had no idea about. And maybe you try to talk to old folks and they don't always
respond.
You know,
want to tell you all their stories.
Yes,
but the help reminded you of that
to some degree. Yes,
and you recommend the movie.
The movie was entertaining. It was the book. You know, read it if you like. Well, the movie was entertaining.
You guys might remember that we talked about the movie and the casting of the movie back when we did the summer movies we're looking forward to. It really is an astonishing cast. Mm-hmm. So, Stephen Thompson, what's going on with you?
Well, first,
is there happiness in your life?
Yes, there is.
Awesome.
First of all, I would be remiss if I didn't point out that one of the things that's making me happy is America. So suck it, Canada. I love my country. One reason I love my country is what's making me happy this week. Oh, my God. What is making me happy this week will neutralize all of the bad things happening to everyone in the United States put together.
Okay.
Because this Friday,
Watching the Throne comes out.
No, that's already out.
I meant physically, like in the store.
Oh,
okay. I like to still touch.
What
store? I like to touch Jay-Z.
Okay, what is making me happy is this Friday, I will be serving as Ari Shapiro's intern. As those of you at this table know, Ari Shapiro is NPR's White House correspondent.
Yes.
Now, why, you might ask, would anyone on earth want to be an intern? But I will be his quote-unquote intern as he covers the Rose Garden ceremony in which Barack Obama meets the Green Bay Packers.
Wow. That is, I have to say, this might be a new milestone of Stephen happiness.
Pretty cool.
So
now,
if you're wondering,
you understand that if you behave in the Rose Garden as you behaved in your own home when they won the Super Bowl, you're going to be tackled by burly men with earpieces.
Yeah. Right? Very burly.
So if you're wondering why there's this strange, like, beam of joy emanating from our nation's capital on Friday, that is why I've been exchanging emails with Ari, sort of going back and forth, kind of helping coach each other on what the experience is going to be like. For example, I have answered his question, the Packers is football, right? And he has answered my question, does body paint count as a shirt? So we're hoping to average Ari Shapiro and Stephen Thompson men who can be presented in public.
The mean common understanding of what is good football team greeting behavior at the White House is something you hope to arrive at.
If anybody has any advice. By the time this airs, I will probably be enjoying said event. But as you can imagine, for those of you loyal listeners to the podcast who know that I bleed green and gold, can just imagine, I'm like Barack O what? Who? But
the president of what?
The president of what? Is he the president of the Green Bay Packers? I'm sorry, that's Mark Murphy.
Well, it is very, very clear that Stephen Thompson is going to be in a special kind of heaven come Friday by the time you hear this podcast, which, is exactly where the second thing that is making me happy this week comes directly from, which is to say heaven.
Heaven, not the Green Bay Packers.
Not the Green Bay Packers. God's blog, published in the Shouts and Murmurs column of the August 8th issue of The New Yorker. It is an imagined blog post written by God that reads, in part, as follows. Update. Pretty pleased with what I've come up with in just 6 days. Going to take tomorrow off. Feel free to check out what I've done so far. The comedy, of course, is in what follows. In the 24 comments on this blog post.
That's amazing.
The usual malcontents and smarty pantses and, you know, trolls responding to what is ostensibly the creation of the universe. So I would just like to read
creator.
You I would just like to read you a couple of these for the flavor. There are at least 24 of them, as I recall, and I urge you to check out the whole thing on the New Yorker website. So people responding to the creation of the universe. The creeping things that creepeth over the earth are gross. The lemon tree? Very pretty. The lemon flower? Very sweet. But the fruit of the lemon? Impossible to eat. Is this a bug or a feature? And then the third one's a little bit longer. Disagree with the haters out there who have a problem with man having dominion over the fish of the sea, the fowl of the air, the cattle of the earth, and so on. However, I do think it's worth considering giving the fowl of the air dominion over the cattle of the earth, because it would be really funny to see, like, a wildebeest or whatever getting bossed around by a baby duck. So this is God's blog. It is by a writer named Paul Sims, who has written a number of other really terrific Shouts and Murmurs for The New Yorker, and I heartily encourage you to check it out. We'll put a link to it on the blog.
Definitely.
And that brings us to the end of this week's Pop Culture Happy Hour, though we are always with you, of course, in spirit.
You're just not talking
and also,
to you.
I'm right behind you right now. No, I'm not.
Also at facebook.com/PCHH, which Stephen Thompson likes to pronounce as...
facebook.com/...
And, of course, you can follow us on Twitter. Barry Hardiman is at B. Hardiman, H-A-R-D-Y-M-O-N. Stephen Thompson is at I Dislike Stephen, that's with a P-H-E-N. And, Tanya, what is your Twitter handle?
T-double-B-T-D-O-U-B-L-E-B.
You can follow me on...
Linda!
You can follow me...
Oh, no!
Has just wandered into the studio as I'm doing my out cue. You can follow her at NPR Monkey C. You can follow me at Trey Graham, which is Trey with an E, and Graham like a city in Alamance County, North Carolina. Special thanks this week to our interns, Andrew and Maddie, who came up with a couple of helpful suggestions for topics.
I believe it was Maddie who suggested hopscotch.
She kind of did. It's true. You can always follow our esteemed producer, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, which is K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, is responsible for our in-and-out music. Next week, I am headed off for a vacation of my own, but glad tidings, Linda Holmes, who is with us in the studio now, will be back in the host chair next week.
I think we should just, we should just record another
one.
Let's just do another one. We'll just tack on a whole extra episode.
Totally. Thanks for being here, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening.